Welcome to PR Squeeze, a podcast brought to you from the Newhouse School of Public Communications at Syracuse University. I'm Tony D'Angelo. I'm a professor of practice and chair of our PR department, and I really enjoy our discussions on this podcast where we speak with industry leaders to see what we can learn. Today, I'm excited to welcome Emily Graham, Global Chief Inclusion and Impact Officer at Omnicom. I'm proud to say she's a member of the Newhouse School's PR Practitioners Advisory Group, who meets with us a couple of times a year to keep us current on issues in the field. Emily also serves as an adjunct professor at the University of Oklahoma. She started her career at MWW, then joined Fleshman Hillard before moving to her current role. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you so much, Tony. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Obviously, Emily, Omnicom's acquisition of IPG has been historic news, really, in the public relations profession. Implementation is proceeding right now. And what I'd like to ask is, how's it going? What would you like professionals to know about the current status?
Oh, wow. Well, we have our seatbelts on and we have been riding. We've been going so fast, and it's actually really an exciting time to be in our industry. It's an exciting time to be at Omnicom. There's a lot of change and transformation, and with that comes opportunity. With that comes, wondering and building what's next. But there's a lot of upside in that. The upside is that, we have scale. We are now officially the largest sales and marketing company in the world. And yes, we are centering all that around being built for intelligent growth in the next era. Omnicom has some of the most world-class communications firms in the world. You talk about legacies like Fleishman Hillard and now Weber Shandwick, and you have Golin and you have Ketchum, and you just have an abundance of riches of agencies that are crown jewels, if you will, of being stalwarts in our industry, but also for Omnicom. So I think where their opportunity is for talent is, you have an opportunity to build and fashion a career and discipline specialties around all sorts of things, because in Omnicom, like many of our competitors, even, you have public relations, you have public affairs, you have financial services, where I began my career, and you have consumer focused. And the great thing about being in a company like Omnicom is we literally have each one of those I mentioned, plus many more that I didn't, if that's of interest to you as a communicator. So I think that's a win. I think, when I started my career in public relations, I actually started at Burson before MWW, when I started my career, to see now the innovative space that we were just the Newhouse Advisory Group. We're in New York recently talking about artificial intelligence and how it's transforming and evolving our skills and our industry really in a meaningful way. So I look forward to this next chapter. I think the next chapter of Omnicom is one that is built to serve our people and serve our clients best. I think it's one that it's meant to meet the market changes and disruption and ensure people are equipped for it.
Right.
I also think it's one that honors the integrity of what communications really is about: storytelling, connecting, transforming, and ensuring that our stakeholders meet this moment where they are, but also that we help guide them for what's to come.
Yes. The scope and scale of what you've assembled as an organization is unprecedented. Is part of the capability that gives you the ability to invest in generative AI? Is that part of what?
Certainly.
Yeah.
That is one of the most exciting parts of the new Omnicom, is this investment focus and strategy all grounded in our platforms and data and intelligent insights. We have our Omni platform that we've been using. We have Axiom, which is newly acquired through the IPG acquisition, which is all about identity and underscoring the value proposition of what we can do for our clients when they really understand their customer and they really understand the identities and the space in which their customer exists. But then there's the other part that my team does as a specialty, as an inclusion practitioner, you come in and you pick up where the technology leaves. So I can tell you a lot about the data and the insights and the systems in which you operate and how you perceive the world, but I may not be able to tell you that there's something very special about what happens in an Italian family dinner. I may not be able to tell you that it's
arguments different.
And in the context, right? Like, remember, when you started talking about inclusion, you started talking about the way people feel and they're seen or show up, it's creating that nuance, it's creating that specialty, it's creating the things that the AI may not quite be able to touch and feel, but that's what inclusion truly is a feeling. Yeah. So one of the things I love about our platforms is they all work very well with our inclusion capacity and strategy, which is integrated into the business. To me, the only way it really works to superpower it and to make it even more functional for the people who are using it.
I'd like to hear more about your role as Global Chief Inclusion and Impact Officer. What is your charge? I mean, it sounds huge. So that's one. And also, what are the main areas where your clients are seeking guidance right now?
So funny. It seems huge and it feels huge in many ways, Tony.
I'll bet.
It's a big old job. So ultimately, I come to this role as a practitioner communicator, which to me is by hands down one of the best ways to do this job, because most of my time is spent storytelling, weaving, stakeholder engagement, and really understanding what people need to believe in and understand the value and purpose of inclusion, and using that as a means to advance our business, advance our people, and to do the best work for our clients, whether you're in our communications function, our advertising function, our media function, our production companies. We believe that inclusion is an accelerator for growth. And we do it in kind of a three-part way. And I think about it as an equation. It's like this. If I see you and understand you and what you bring to the table and you feel safe doing that, you feel included. Inclusion is a feeling. It's not just an outcome. It's how you feel.
Right. Okay.
After you feel included, then you might be able to say, Emily, I have a great idea. I want to try this. I want to do that. You feel free enough, Tony, to disrupt. You feel free enough to innovate. You feel free enough to do different things. So it's inclusion plus innovation. That usually comes out to something really meaningful, which creates an impact. So inclusion and impact are the core pieces of my title, as you just read.
Right.
And innovation is a fuel that connects those two together. So inclusion plus innovation equals impact is the way we do the work. And impact can not only mean business impact, but it can mean societal impact too.
Yeah.
And in Omnicom's role and in our position, what an opportunity to do great things, to do good while being good for the business. And I think I have the privilege of doing that work globally. And we have 100+ thousand employees now, and they see me and my team as the carriers of ensuring that inclusion stays forward and front, and that its mission stays true to our work and our business.
Yeah. It seems to me that you're ultimately focused on trust. Mm-hmm. And I get on my soapbox with students and with professionals many times saying, look, our end game is trust. If you don't have that, you know, if employees don't trust you, they're not going to work there. If customers don't trust you, they're not going to buy your products. Mm-hmm. If shareholders don't trust you, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really interesting the way that you and Omnicom have sort of, you know, put together that formula to make that happen. I've never heard it expressed quite that way before.
That's what a communicator does, right? Because we distill, we assess, and we figure out, like, how does this matter? And in the environment that I find myself in a company with so many people and so many leaders, I truly am a client counselor, not only to our CEOs, but to our clients. I come in and I help provide counsel and figure out how we make inclusion a tool, something that's resonant, something that helps go further faster and an accelerator in the business. And it's exciting because everything's different. Every industry is different. You know, the environment that we're in, we're dealing with a lot of change and both internally within our business, but also societally. So it requires a toolkit that truly was given to me being a practitioner and being a communicator and dealing with issues and crisis medication, but trust, forming trust, seeing people eyeball to eyeball in a world like mine, you have to be okay with people not feeling comfortable. I'm not sure knowing what to say or how to say, or if they've navigated something in the right way and still being able to meet people where they are and counsel and support them. So it's really a privilege.
And isn't it also true that if trust is established, and that's hard work many times, that people are also free not only to innovate, but to disagree, right? And to make people allow people to feel comfortable enough to say, I'm not good with that, or I, boss, I completely disagree with your whole
That's right.
strategy on this, and here's why.
Or we're
Which
missing
I,
this audience. This is not how this group would respond to this. Actually, we missed the mark on that. We have a series at Omnicom that my team has started called Round Zero. Round, like the circle. And here's what it is. When we usually do campaigns, creative campaigns for clients, the creatives come in and they work with the clients in the brief process. And often there's multiple rounds of edits and revise, right? We want to use that framework and say to our people, if you were building from the very beginning, before you touch the brief and you were just interrogating how we're going to approach it, let's say that's round zero. What would we do to infuse an inclusive point of view and perspective?
I see.
Do we have the right people in the room? Do we have enough dissent? Do we
Right.
have enough safety for people to explore new territory? So we have started to create a process and framework where we are helping our people think differently. And round zero and inclusion is a key part of how we break the cycle of establishing trust and building inclusion in.
Well, and what's great about that is it strikes me that inclusion is foundational. It's not an add-on. We've done the strategy. Let's figure out how to make it inclusive, right?
That's right.
So that's so
Yeah,
interesting.
yeah.
As you referenced, Emily, we're living in a time of social and political polarization, right? A lot of conflict. And one of the dynamics over the past couple of years, I think, has been pushback on DEI programs, right? That's happened in so many sectors. And there's pressure on even what we call those programs. There's been political pressure by online activists to disband those programs or shift their focus. And some corporations have caved into that pressure, quite frankly. How are you managing those kinds of societal pressures, both as an organization and on behalf of your clients?
I think we have a crossroads as a world society where we have to make some decisions on what we believe and why we believe in. I think we've had companies struggle particularly because they've gotten far away from their mission and values. And when you make decisions, even we would say this in communications practice too, when you make decisions based on the missions and values and there's clarity, then everything kind of stems from that. You can go back and say, is this the right way to move this? Is this the right business to acquire? Is this the right decision to make? Is this the right way to communicate to our people? I think that there have been challenges because companies never really had to reconcile what diversity, equity, inclusion meant, and what it has always had to mean. In moments where there's change, you don't want to be spending your time figuring out your why. You want to know your why very clearly. Your what may evolve, though, Tony, and I think that's where I would encourage companies to go. It's what we've had to look at is our why is clear. We believe inclusion is a business driver. We believe it's strong. We believe it's important. We've had the proof that outputs and outcomes related to inclusion are good. good for our people, good for our business. But what does that look like in a new AI supercharged environment, in a place where people are distracted, in a place where we reportedly and repeatedly have people feeling othered, not feeling a part of systems, feeling like they're excluded, feeling like we haven't done enough to really be meaningfully inclusive? That means you got to change your what a little bit. For some people, that what was a name change. For some people, that what was a shift focus. If you are doing this work and you have not evaluated evolution and maturation, that is not putting you in a position of strength. You have to, because inclusion is only made up of people, and people shift. So, that's what I first counsel companies and clients, and what I have said to them is, what is the mission? What is the value? And how are we deviating from that in decisions that we're making? Look, that is not the same, though, as we have a license to operate in the environment in which we're operating in, whether it's legislatively or regulatory. Like, we got to be mindful of what our business needs look like in that environment. To that, I would say, that's your responsibility. You need to be very clear with your stakeholders on being compliant and aligned with what is being outlined from a legal standpoint. And we need to ensure that we're doing that well. I also think that you want to use this as an opportunity to recast what's working, what's not, ensure that it's working for the people who need it in your business. And I think that the work is important, and for it to continue, we need to show the value, we need to show business connectivity, we need to show something that's integrated in a systemic way, and that will ultimately have the ROI that we believe is mission critical to how we advance in the marketplace.
Wow, that makes great sense. I really like what you've said about fidelity to the values that you have, while the what's may change. Because ultimately, I mean, that affects your brand. And it strikes me that the moves that some organizations have made would lead their audience to say, well, what do you really stand for then? That's you said at one point you were this, and now you're saying this. So what's your brand?
That's it. And look, we know how hard stakeholder engagement and loyalty is these days. We've seen this play out very publicly when brands have miscalculated what their customers or what audiences will believe in or see as a personal affront to decisions and commitments that they have made. That's why you want to be very thoughtful about this. And also remember, legacies and work of inclusion is not meant for a year or two or three or four. It is intended to outlast, to grow, and to sustain from generation to generation. I mean, we're in our fourth or fifth iteration of what diversity and inclusion really is. And I think we want to be able to have something that sustains. In order to sustain, you have to evolve. And I think that's the moment we're in. I think that's what we're seeing in our business. We've seen it already. I described our new evolution to you, innovation, inclusion, and impact. And you were like, wow, I never heard that. That's a good sign for me. That means it's resonant, it's relevant, and it's meaningful.
Yeah. It also signals, I think, that this is more than a campaign. Which is temporal, right? That's our campaign of 2026, and then we'll be on to something else. It's, you know, much more fundamental.
And there are times for campaigns, moments that matter, heritage, cultural ones. But what we're looking at is inclusion. Tony, it needs to be seen as a competency that you build, a muscle that you strengthen, something that becomes more inherent to how you operate. Because if we can get inclusion to be a competency, then our business will have the capacity and it will have a capability. That's what we're trying to get to. So you can get 100,000 people to see inclusion as something that they need to build, strengthen, and understand. Then you have a more inclusive company, ultimately, because it's just made up of the systems. And I think that makes us do harder work to qualify what it is, how it comes to life, and what's in it for me. And I take that as a big challenge, especially in times like this. But I think we have made a lot of progress because we have had no choice But to be clear, and to be more refined and ensure that our mission aligns with our business values and the purpose of our business's work.
Absolutely. Well, Emily, I've learned a lot from this conversation, and I can think of no leader better qualified to address that challenge, which will not be solved by next Tuesday, but is an ongoing challenge.
Yeah.
So, but I appreciate it. And to our audience, thank you for joining us. I hope you have found this conversation to be worth the squeeze.